Hi, everybody. Welcome to Advice for Life with Lynn. Today's issue is how porn affects your relationship.
Is it an escape like other vices?
It is. And think about how relaxing it is. I have so many people saying, I can't sleep unless I masturbate. And if I'm going to become erect, I need erotic porn.
So it's not the masturbation that's the problem. It's the...
They use it for something. Just like we do with anything, right?
You have problems? She has answers. Getting down to the nitty-gritty with people who know what they're talking about. This is Advice for Life with Lynn.
So yeah, this podcast is going to be about sex. If you're offended, you should stop listening. So I don't know why I need to say that disclaimer. Sex is such a big topic. My granny used to call it SEX. She would never say sex. We'll get into that later. But it is a huge topic. But we can't deny that these days watching pornography online is a part of many, many people's lives, especially the younger generation. Unfortunately, the Gen Zs have grown up with it, and I say unfortunately because as a parent, it was really challenging to monitor my kids' phone and computer, and they're like young adults now, so we're talking like, whatever, 10 years ago. We did it. We did a good job, I think, but it was a lot of effort to protect them and keep them from growing up too quickly. So when my kids were coming of age, I remember telling them real sex with a real person is not like what you see on the internet or in movies. That is acting, kids. That's performing. She doesn't really like it. At least, you know, that's what I was saying in porn. Oh, yes. Anyway, real sex is about connection. We all know that. Response, being vulnerable, and yes, passion, and being careful and taking care of yourself. But then people grow up. And consumption of online porn is way up. Studies show that about 69% of American men and 40% of American women watch porn online. Is that interesting? It's always more men. An example of this booming business, Pornhub, says that they got more than 2 billion visits in a single month last year. And now we have OnlyFans. Now, that platform is really kind of difficult to pinpoint how many people are watching porn on OnlyFans, because that's a platform that has other content, but it did have 178 million visits in December alone of last year. And 79% of that traffic comes from men. So the question is, if you are watching porn, and I know you are, probably if you're listening to this, is it bad for you? How does it affect you? If you're watching it with your romantic partner, can it be a tool to enhance things in the bedroom? Can it be a good thing? And how do you know if you're actually addicted to watching porn instead of connecting with a real human being? Most importantly, how can we control our sex lives instead of habitually turning to something that's easy and not emotionally gratifying? A lot of questions. So let's find out. We're going to chat today. I'm so excited about this with a real sex therapist. I'm so excited that I met her by chance. There's no by chance. And I'm like, oh my God, I got to have you on my podcast. We've got Dr. Mindy in the house. Thank you so much for being here.
Hello, Lynn. I'm so excited to be here.
Mindy, you've been nominated for Expert of the Year as a sexologist, somebody who studies sex and sexuality education on this dating app, Hilly, which I had never heard about until I met you. So Hilly apparently uses AI to help match people up instead of just, you know, oh, he's cute, she's hot, or profile that talks about how great you are. So that's really interesting. We can talk about that too. So thank you for coming here on a Sunday. Before we get into porn, and that's a beautiful, juicy topic, I just have to ask you a little bit of background about yourself. We talked briefly about this before we started recording. Why did you want to become a sex therapist?
I think I was born to be a sex therapist, but when I was young, I didn't even know this profession existed. And I think it's new. So I went to UM, earned my master's in therapy.
University of Miami.
And I started my private practice in Brickell. And as I was sitting there with just working with amazing, beautiful, professional people, and it all the challenges they were having really came down to relationships and sex. Mm. And as a young therapist, I was sitting across from them thinking, how can I professionally help them? And I didn't have the tools. UM really didn't broach on sexual challenges. So I followed my favorite professor and I continued to earn my PhD in human sexuality. And once I started marketing myself as a sexologist, my practice started booming. Mm. I think people were looking for a professional to give them the guidance of, here are the tools, the physical exercises, the mental exercises that you can do to live your best sex life. I truly believe we all can have the sex life we desire.
So you saw a need and were drawn to that. Who's your favorite professor, by the way? Let's give a shout out.
Yes, her name is Dr. Marilyn Volker.
Volker.
Okay. Dr. Marilyn Volker. You may have seen her. She's been in the press a lot. She was one of the female founders, really, in this field. And I always just admired her. And she was one of my mentors as well.
One last pre-porn question. It's just a Lynn question. Can you spot somebody right away who might have a sexual hang up? And can you spot somebody who might be a good lover? Like, okay, because I see like the way people look at each other. I'm like, oh, I bet they're having some great sex.
I think it's, you know how you can tell?
How?
How they dance. How their hips move, right?
Yes.
Like, it's how they dance. That's how you can really tell how they're going to be in bed.
So, how many of your clients come to you because porn is a problem in their lives or relationships?
More than you think. I think there are two ways that they come to me. So they've come to me because they're in an extreme situation where it's very clear that they struggle with porn. I have to say right off the bat, I'm not against porn. I think it's lovely. I think it's exciting. I'm definitely not against it. But like anything in life, we have to learn how to use it responsibly. And the more we watch it, the more endorphins that it releases and the more that we want to watch it again. So it can get out of control very quickly. So some people will come to me saying, I struggle with porn. And then there are other people who are just coming to me for sexual challenges and they don't really know where it's coming from. But through my interview process, we can easily kind of target if it is coming from porn.
Well, how do you know that porn's a problem?
You know, it's more males right now, but I will tell you, I'm starting to get more females coming in talking to me about their porn challenges. So some of my males will come in and if they don't know that they're struggling with porn, they'll say, you know, I'm having sexual challenges. I can't maintain an erection. I can't get an erection. I'm not enjoying sex or my libido's down. These are all really common signs that maybe our porn use is getting out of hand.
How does that, tell me how porn physically affects the body and gets out of hand affects your real sex life.
Well, so this is my favorite. Let's bring it back to the foundation of why this is happening. Mm-hmm. So I call it porn tolerance. When we start watching porn, right, we Google different things, we see what we like. And if you notice, every time then you go into Google again, maybe you're watching something that's a little bit more exciting, a little bit more erotic. Because as you're watching porn, as you're having that orgasm, you're having an extreme surge of your happy hormones, serotonin, dopamine, norepinephrine. They're surging more than with a person, because that's what the porn is designed to do.
How is that physiologically happening? Why do you get more happy hormones?
Because it's so extreme and so erotic. So one of the porn education points I will say is what you watch in porn cannot be replicated with a partner. As you were saying earlier, it's not real. It's cinema. It's acting. So to compare that to somebody in real life, you're not going to have the same surge. And that's okay, right? It's okay. It's normal. It's what it's supposed to be. But we get addicted to that surge. And so every time we kind of want to get a little bit more and a little bit more. And if we do that on a daily basis or we do that often, now we have a high porn tolerance is what I call it.
Mm.
Then when we go back and have sex with our partner, it's not the same. It's not as erotic as maybe what they're watching in the porn. So they're not getting as turned on. They're not getting as erect. And the libido kind of just stays lower.
So let's get weird. And let me ask you, is there anything wrong? Like, are there people out there who are like, don't want a relationship with a human? And they're like, I just want this relationship with porn.
I see that all the time. They'll be in a relationship, but they've learned over time that, you know what? I enjoy porn more. Mm. So I see a lot of couples where they'll be living in a sexless relationship, and then one will kind of sneak off every night or at least some point of the day and watch porn. It can become really isolative.
Oh. So the fact that they're in a relationship with a human but having sex by themselves with porn, stimulating them, how does that affect? What do you think about that?
So then you start
that dysfunction?
Well, you start emotionally separating from that too. So yeah. Sex can be something that connects so many couples.
Right.
I believe, you know, we talk about love languages. I think that sex is actually another love language.
100%.
I have so many clients who tell me, I feel so connected to my partner when we have sex. That's absolutely okay. So when you have no relationship that is missing that founding piece, it feels very disconnecting and very isolative. And that will absolutely trickle down into the bond with each other.
Have you ever met anybody who is like, I'm okay not having a romantic partner or be in a relationship. I'm fine, like, going out with my friends and traveling, and then it's me and porn. Have you ever met anybody like that?
Sure. I mean, here in Miami, right? A lot of people don't want to get into a serious relationship. So I think they are more subject or maybe more prone to having their porn use get out of control because they're using porn as a consistent place to get.
But do you think is that detrimental? I know we're going extreme here, but is that detrimental as a human being, or is that okay? Like, can you live a full, happy, healthy life with you and porn, that's your sexual department, and not have a relationship?
If that were my client, I would say no. I would say let's bring it back, because I believe that everything in balance. Mm-hmm. And now we're so far out of balance with the porn. So no, I would say when I get to that place and I deal with my singles, right, they'll be talking to me, well, I feel like I'm starting to get dependent on porn. So that's when we remove the porn and we really start putting it more in balance of they masturbate with just being present with their body, and then maybe they masturbate to porn. But there's been a big swing with porn, I've noticed, you know, with the younger generation. So early 20s, they're not watching porn as much.
Really?
I was shocked about this too. And I think you're seeing it all around, right? They're also not drinking as much alcohol, and
they're smoking, or they're they're definitely not drinking as much alcohol. That's true.
But I do think that they're seeing some of these challenges.
So are you saying that the Gen Zs, some of them or a lot of them, are recognizing that porn's not good for you?
Yeah.
Or a lot of it is not good for you?
Absolutely.
Interesting.
And they're really trying to be present. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of shocked about this too, because it was my young 20-year-old clients coming to me. And with every intake, I always will ask about porn, no matter what you came in for. And a lot of them will say maybe once a week or once every 2 weeks, but their masturbation is consistent.
They're
just trying to watch responsibly.
And what do you think about that as a doctor?
I think it's healthy.
Okay.
I think you're in balance.
For the people listening, for the people coming to you, I think if somebody makes an appointment with any kind of therapist, any kind of coach, you know, there's just making the appointment is an act of self-awareness. So you have people coming to you wanting to have better sex lives, wanting to better themselves in the relationship. What about the people listening who are like, oh, I wanted to listen to this podcast because they're talking about porn, but they don't. How do you know if you have a problem?
I would say, you know, you have a problem when maybe you feel disconnected from your partner. Again, the symptoms, maybe you're having a lower libido, or if there's any consequences, right? So are you maybe choosing to masturbate and watch porn over doing work, or doing maybe something around your house that needs to be done, or spending time with your family?
That's really true for any addiction. When it interferes with your life, then you know you have a problem.
I mean, nowadays, we really can get addicted to any vice. But I think the two hardest addictions to moderate are eating disorders and sex and porn addiction. Because it's something you have to then relearn how to have a relationship with.
Let's talk about how do you relearn to have a relationship with porn?
So for my clients who... It's gotten out of control, right? They're coming to me, they're saying, I don't enjoy sex with my partner, I'm having ED, I'm not able to hold an erection. We completely detox them from it first. Mm. So oftentimes we'll put blockers on their phone. I mean, this is one of the hardest addictions to work through because
it's so accessible.
It's at your fingertips.
Right.
So we will put blockers everywhere. And they'll have an accountability partner. Typically, I'm their accountability partner. But we completely detox them from it, and we try to bring in healthier coping skills in that moment. So, you know, if nighttime would be the time that they would watch porn or in the afternoon, we would find something to put in that moment. But we really go cold turkey.
It's very much like smoking or alcohol or any kind of addiction.
The same withdrawals.
Yeah. What are the withdrawals from porn like?
Irritability. Not sleeping well. Feisty. Yeah.
Feisty. At what point in the detox do people start feeling better?
Takes a while.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. I think people start feeling better when they start talking to others who have similar challenges. I think I see a turning point when they finally agree to go to Sex Addicts Anonymous or speak with groups that have similar challenges. I find that's kind of when they... So it's less of a time frame because, you know, they can just be... not watching it, but are they really treating the problem? No, you have to be active in treating it. So,
what's underneath the addiction to porn problem for many people?
So many things. Childhood.
Yeah. Is it an escape? Like other vices?
It is. I think about how relaxing it is. I have so many people saying, I can't sleep unless I masturbate. And if I'm going to become erect, I need erotic porn.
Mm. So it's not the masturbation that's the problem. It's the...
They use it for something. Just like we do with anything, right?
Do you, as a doctor, treat that?
Mm-hmm.
You get to the issue.
Always. You have to.
Right.
But typically when they first start with me, we really just kind of focus on the surface level piece of let's remove the porn, let's put in a coping skill, let's get you in groups where you feel supported, you know, let's put up the barriers so you don't feel tempted to look at the sites, things like that. And then as we peel the layers back, we'll absolutely figure out why? What was this serving? Because it's a coping skill, right? At the end of the day,
right, of course.
Watching the porn, it was just a coping skill for something.
Mm-hmm. I want to escape and feel good.
Yeah.
Kind of like a good back scratch or whatever.
And a lot of my clients are amazing, intelligent professionals that work long hours.
I want to feel good right now kind of thing. You said we replace it with a different coping skill. Like what?
It depends for that person. Some people will work out. Some people say that working out actually increases their desire to watch porn because you're stimulating and you're increasing your testosterone levels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some people say like actually throwing themselves into the family life, like not allowing themselves to maybe go in the bedroom or something like that.
What about reaching for your partner?
Exactly. I love that one. Sometimes a relationship needs to be healed at the same time. Mm-hmm. So even maybe doing like couples therapy or just really having time together is really helpful.
We touched on this briefly, but how will porn affect our kids' sexual relationships? You said that a lot of the 20-year-olds, Gen Zs are watching less porn. But for those, I guess where I'm coming from as a parent, like I feel kind of bad for our kids because... My God, I was so limited. We had, you know, dirty magazines, quote, Playboy, which really wasn't dirty.
Right.
Penthouse, you know, and that's it.
But everybody shared them.
Right. And so how will it affect this generation?
Parents have to be active. When I was listening to your intro, I love that you said you went through your child's phone. I think you have to. A lot of my parents do not want to monitor the computers, the iPads, or the phones. I'm like, You have to, because otherwise you're doing them a disservice. And this is a good question. For years now, I've been doing a lot of mom groups. And at the end of the night, we'll be talking about their sex life. But for years, at the end of a mom's night, it all comes back to, how do I talk to my kids about porn?
Yeah. Yes.
So I followed that need. And right now I'm in the process of writing a book on how to talk to your kids about porn. And through my research and my personal experience, I make the argument that I believe that we should start talking to our children about porn at age 8 or 9. And moms look at me like I'm absolutely insane. They're like, how would you?
I completely agree, though, because it's right there. Again, we talked about this. If you're monitoring your kid's phone, but are you monitoring their friend's phone? No, you can't.
You can't. Or if they go to a friend's house, right, and there's an older sibling.
Right.
So they're being exposed to it. And I will tell you, I have a lot of clients, doesn't matter what age they are, they can come in their 20s. I've had men in their 60s. When I trace back when they first started watching porn, honestly, you're talking 6, 7, 8, 9.
Yeah.
So you as a parent want to be the first one to open that door, because it's going to be opened. And I realize that's a young age. So I say, how do we do that? Mm-hmm. We do it with age-appropriate language and family values mixed. But you have to open that door for them.
So let's do a little synopsis on the 8-year-old. Well, first of all, you got to, I mean, I started talking to my kids about sex, I think when they were 4, about this really great book. It was just, it was very medically and
perfect.
I remember their dad was squirming like crazy, but I was one reading it. Because, you know, I mean, this is how you were born and this is what happened, and keep it, you know, like you said, age appropriate. So let's get, I would hope you talk a little bit about sex before 8. Right? You can't just jump into, okay, we're going to talk about porn.
Right?
Absolutely. Okay, give a little background.
So I think you would absolutely start, you would explain the body.
Right.
So I have a 2.5-year-old, and I will use all the medically appropriate terms with his body, because I think that takes out the stigma.
Right. And not pee-pee, right? Penis.
Right. I always say penis.
Right,
you know,
right.
He'll say his balls. I'll be like, let's talk about that's your scrotum.
Uh-huh.
Like, I
right,
will go right back into that, because I think it takes out that stigma. And then
it's just,
you're giving medically,
facts.
It's facts, right? And so then
no
we can,
shame.
Yeah. And then you can also talk about, you can know the female body, mm-hmm, and the male body and all these things. And it kind of just flows in from a medical perspective, just educating them.
Okay. So let's do a little synopsis with the 8-year-old.
It feels weird, right? Because they're so young.
Right. Well, would you keep it generic? Like, well, you know, now you can watch, well, I guess by then you would say sex.
Mm-hmm.
But two people have sex on TV and in your phone. And what would you say? What would be your opening line?
I would say sex is an adult decision, hands down. I always say that sex is an adult decision. And I would also say watching sex on TV, that's also an adult movie. So I would say that this is something that we should not watch at age 8.
And if he says, well, you know, Juan showed me something, how would you respond to that?
What did you see?
Oh, okay.
Before you kind of project your own pieces of what, mm-hmm, you think porn is, ask them what they saw.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll tell you. And then I would just encourage you to kind of correct it and, mm-hmm, bring it in like, that is a movie that is between two adults and it's really not for kids to watch. So next time, maybe you and Juan just put it away.
Yeah. And Juan's no longer your friend. No, I'm just kidding.
No more play dates.
Juan has a bad home life. Bad parents. No, just kidding.
No, it's so hard to control these things. That's why
it is
opening the door. I always think just open the door.
Well, and we're getting the whole parent thing, which is beautiful too, because I mean, I do love what you said, asking questions, and you know, is great, not just with sex with kids, just in general. What did you think about that? How did that make you feel? That creates dialogue, lifelong dialogue.
Exactly.
So we're talking about how bad porn is. Well, the addiction of porn, any addiction is bad. Can porn be a positive thing in a relationship?
Sure.
Tell me about that.
Again, definitely not against porn. I think it'd be very exciting and very bonding. And some couples like to watch it together.
Yeah.
And some couples, you know, maybe they watch it individually and then they want to talk about it or find what they found sexy.
Right. Could we do that? What did you think about this?
Kind of, sure,
open the door to maybe expanding.
Because what does it do, right? Watching that scene, this make-believe erotic scene, it opens conversation between the two people. And that's kind of the golden nugget.
Right. And the conversation leads to what?
Exciting things. It's so hard, I've noticed, for couples to have the sex talk because they overthink it. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll ask questions like, well, what do you like in bed?
Right.
And I'm like, that is a very difficult question to answer. It's so overarching. So sometimes couples need prompts.
Okay.
That they can then elaborate on.
Like, oh, what did you think of that position we saw? What did you think about her wearing this?
Or sure.
Kind of that specific. Okay.
You can do that. And then it just opens this dialogue. And trust me, you're going to learn something about yourself. You're going to learn something about your partner. And then they'll probably have an action plan after. Or it's just tantalizing in mm-hmm. itself to talk about it. And today, people have really low libidos that they need something that's a little tantalizing.
Why do we have low libidos?
I don't know. I think we're all stressed.
Interesting.
The number one reason my phone rings in Miami is because people are not having sex. And I will argue that it's all ages. All ages. When the pandemic hit, I have never had so many young 20-year-olds calling me saying, I'm not having sex with my partner.
Well, yeah, the pandemic was a special time.
And I think it really just highlighted how we all have low libidos. Mm. But they're still here.
What do you mean they're still here?
People still struggle with their libidos. I say look at your libido as like a muscle and you have to work it out every single day. So to have a healthy, happy libido, we have to do something that makes us feel good in our bodies and in our minds.
Like?
Anything that can make you feel sexy right. and confident. It has to be the confidence piece too. So some people will, okay, they'll start kind of surface level of let me wear lingerie, or let me wear makeup, but then they'll also get to maybe a workout class that makes them feel good in their body.
For me, that's what it is. Like when
music
I see myself
too.
In the mirror and I'm like, ooh, I'm so glad I did my abs today. And it's really, it's not about impressing my husband. It's impressing myself.
And that is makes your libido really happy.
Yes. And I know that sounds selfish. Well, because I grew up in a Catholic school, but it's actually not. You know, you have to turn yourself on before you turn anybody else on. That's been my personal experience.
Yeah, of course.
Interesting. I just looked at my question here. If you're getting off to porn and you don't share it with your partner, are you cheating?
That would be for the couple to answer. That would absolutely be for the couple to answer. I don't think there's a blanket yes or no to that. In a monogamous relationship, we can assume, let's mm-hmm. say it's a monogamous, it would absolutely be what the two people would agree on. Because one person in the relationship may say, yeah, that does feel like a betrayal to me.
It's not transparent.
Mm-mm. And it's not uniformed. It's a conversation.
What do you mean it's not uniformed?
It's going to be different for every couple.
Right. Okay.
Because mm-hmm. Some people may say, no, I'm okay with you watching it.
What do you tell your clients?
That I would open the conversation for the two of them.
And why wouldn't somebody share it? Shame? Or?
I think porn is isolating.
Yeah.
I've noticed. Mm. I think it's just very isolating and people don't talk about it. My practice is full of couples and then males come in individually and they want to know where I keep my notes and how confidential it is and what HIPAA program am I using.
Out.
They're so afraid to talk about their porn watching.
Huh.
So I think it is very isolative. So we have porn where it is a cinema, it's a movie. But oftentimes the trends that I see, then people fall into the OnlyFans next. And that one is really interesting and very tricky because now you have a live person on the other side.
So for people who don't know, OnlyFans is a platform where it has many different uses, but I think the most popular is porn or fetishes where you can pay somebody, correct, to do what you want.
And there's many platforms like them. But so really what I see happening is people move from porn, then sure, they'll say, oh, now let me pay somebody to kind of enact out this fetish that
right.
I have because my partner is not going to do it. Okay. But then they also, so if you think about the person on the other side, they're also in it for the money. So it becomes a sale. It's a business. It's a sales approach. So how do they get their clients hooked? Emotional. So I have many people who now were porn. Then they hired this person to enact a fetish. But now there's some conversation. And now we're getting to know each other personally.
They're having a relationship.
And now we have an emotional relationship. And that is absolutely cheating and a betrayal. And that's where a lot of couples will come in and will have to heal from infidelity.
Wow. Yeah, that makes sense. And it's easy for, in general, men. Let's just use it as a...
Sure.
We can interchange men and women, but... I would think it would be easy to manipulate somebody's coming to you with a need. You want to make money. It's just like prostitution. And you give him what he wants. You give him attention.
Oh,
you suck your toe or whatever he wants.
Oh, it's so good.
And women are good at that.
Oh, it's so good.
Let's be honest.
And it's so opposite. So if you're in a relationship with somebody, you're going to have baggage. You're going to have the everyday nags of who's going to like clean and cook.
Why'd you leave your socks on the floor?
Exactly.
You never listen to me.
Yeah. What movie you're going to watch, like who's snoring.
Right.
So you have all these little things. But now when we almost compare that to someone that's being paid, they have nothing.
Right.
But they're sitting on the other side about, wow, you work so hard.
Poor Ting. I don't have to pick up your dirty laundry.
Exactly.
It's just a moment
so
in time.
It's so black and white, and it becomes so addictive. Because the other, you know, the OnlyFans, like, it's so easy. They can just kind of be praised.
Right. And Venmo me.
Yeah.
So how do you heal clients from that?
Just like any infidelity. We really do, right? So you have
just
to, again.
Own it.
Yeah.
Accountability.
Usually we'll do couples counseling and we'll heal from the infidelity. We'll heal from the past sexual hurts because I'm sure they're in there. And then we will also work with, we'll say the male individually working through the porn and sex addiction.
How many of your clients, what percentage of your clients come to you with this OnlyFans issue because they were caught versus they're like, honey, I have a problem. I'm on. They were honest and took responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
What's the percentage of both?
I only have one. I've been doing this for 10 years. I only have one male client that came in on his own.
I knew it. I knew it.
Because
you're ashamed and it's working for you, sort of.
And in that case, too, he wasn't even aware that he had this dependence. He was so used to it.
That doesn't count.
Yeah. He was like, wait, I came in for something else.
So most of them or all of them were caught.
Yeah, basically. And you know what? It makes sense, too, because typically we only start treatment for whatever our vice is because, not for ourselves, we rarely ever tell ourselves, I need to go see treatment. It's because the person we love the most almost gave us an ultimatum.
Yeah.
And it's okay. I say whatever gets the ball rolling.
How many, I don't know why I'm into numbers today, but how many of those people who were busted on OnlyFans cheating with their partners went on to stay together?
I have some beautiful couples that went on to stay together. Usually, I think if you come to me and you make the financial commitment, you make the time commitment, you want it to work.
Right. You're making an effort.
And I believe you can absolutely heal from infidelity. You absolutely can heal. And how does that work? It's really the person who was unfaithful is absolutely remorseful and wants to change and makes those efforts. You can build trust through that again.
And if there's no more remorse or there's a lot of defensiveness, you can tell right away they're toast, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Typically, in that case, it'll just happen again.
And then the other person will be like, peace out. Good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck. Good luck with your OnlyFans relationship.
And I'll tell them that. You know, I think I've been doing this for so long. You know, we can see the ones who are into the treatment and going to heal. And I will absolutely say, you are not fully into treatment. And if you do not fully immerse yourself into this treatment, you will do it again.
Just use the money for OnlyFans instead of therapy.
Yeah, you know, and I do have clients where I've had to say that too. And I think it's hard. But if we don't stop the behavior. You know, I have some clients too where Instagram is their vice.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of sliding into DMs.
Yeah, a lot of hearts, a lot of likes.
And I'm kind of like, listen, if you are not willing to possibly even delete your Instagram, because that is the slippery slope for you, if you're not willing to do that, then you don't, what are we doing here?
Is, there are some people who are not on social media.
Mm-hmm.
Like my husband is not on social media.
He Good for him.
3 years ago, it was the best thing for him, for us, for just, you know, he was getting all feisty during some political stuff. And anyway, do you feel like that is, it sounds extreme maybe to some people, but is that, as a doctor, do you recommend that being a really healthy way to go if you don't need it?
Sure. And it sounds like in your case, though, it was pulling his time away from you. And that's the damaging piece. So in that
I was making him angrier.
Sure. So that would be some reason why we either have to figure out how it doesn't make him angry. Mm-hmm. And if that's not there, why not remove it?
Yeah. I always say, like, when I get out of this business, which is probably a lie, that I'm going to delete my social media. What? Okay, so let's just, I like to review, because some people listen to this podcast while they're running or whatever, and they don't have a pen and paper. So to review, you know you might have a problem with porn addiction when these three things might happen. You feel disconnected, maybe, from your relationships. You have lower libido, because you're kind of wasting it and all your happy hormones are going to the screen. And there are consequences, like it's affecting your life in some way. Dr. Mindy says to fix it, she detoxes you. You have an accountability partner, which is true in any addiction. And you replace it with something else.
Just like any addiction. The porn addiction is no different than alcoholism or a drug addiction.
Right.
But we have to relearn how to have sex.
Ooh, how do you do that?
It's hard. It's actually really hard. So basically when we remove, oftentimes many people will detox from sex, masturbation, porn altogether. And then you have to relearn how to have healthy relationships, how to have a healthy relationship with your own sex life, having sex with another person.
So you learn, for example, how to masturbate without the screen, learn how to get in touch with your body,
which is,
that's a good thing,
which is actually very difficult to do, because people who meditate, I think, are a little better at it. But so many of us are so used to masturbating to porn that if we're not going to watch porn, it's really difficult to enjoy that. So what I tell my clients is, okay, we're going to refocus the mind and the body connection so that your mind is going to focus on the pleasure that you're giving it. But that is something I have to teach people, and I think it's not as easy as it sounds.
Well, how do you teach that?
Verbally. So okay. Everything I do is verbal, right?
I figured that. I think some people do think, oh, she's a sex therapist. Does she have sex with clients? No, yes, of course not.
Oh, yes. I get that question all the time. I have to tell so many people on the phone, we realize this is all talk therapy. But
I'm not going to show you anything.
Okay. You basically just do that by, I say, in height, focusing your mind on your body and just really activating all five senses. Kind of grounding yourself. What am I seeing? What am I feeling? What am I smelling? What does this touch feel like? You're just really making yourself attuned to the pleasure that you're feeling.
So, and then how do you help them connect and have better sex or sex at all with their partner when they're in detox of porn?
So it's slow. Once we restart that again, I mean, and it's hard for couples. Can you imagine you're coming to a sex therapist and your sex therapist is saying, okay, we're going to take sex off the table for now and we'll decide later when it's coming back?
Well, I think that would be really good. I would imagine you'd start with, like, okay, you're having 20 minutes of connection time tonight. It's a back rub or it's a touch. Is that what you recommend? I mean, you got to start somewhere.
That's what I do recommend. And we take sex completely off the table. Right. And sometimes
that's really hot, though, I think.
Honestly, I think it kind of builds a lot of tension.
It does. You kind of build up. Right?
You do. But sometimes one person can become angry, you know? That other partner's like, why am I being punished? Why do I now got to have sex with my partner? So it is actually really hard. So we say we're relearning how to have sex together, and that will come with just trust. Because I want you to have good sex. Right. I want you to have, like, good connecting sex where the orgasm feels very powerful and connecting. And there we have to be able to trust our partner And if you know that your partner is doing something that's also hurting himself and hurting the relationship, right?
What do you mean you have to trust your partner?
You have to emotionally trust your partner to have good sex.
Yeah, that's true. For mm-hmm. sure. We mm-hmm. know that because we women, most of us can't have sex when we're angry. Because we don't feel emotionally safe.
Until it's makeup sex, until, then I swear.
Right, that's true. What is that time frame like when you're not, when you're saying, okay, we're one partner's in detox, so you guys are not going to have sex for X amount of time. What is it? 3 weeks? You're looking at me with bug eyes. Is it longer than 3 weeks?
It can be.
I guess it depends on the couple.
Honestly, it really depends on the person and how deep the addiction is. Mm. I know people who have gone a year plus. You know, so if we think about, let's talk about like an alcoholic. Okay.
What am I saying? I was single and divorced, yeah, over a year.
But, you know, if we think about someone who's addicted to alcohol, it takes about a year for their brain to detox. Mm. So somebody who's really addicted to sex, meaning that they used sex as a way to cope with whatever pain is buried in them, that's going to take a long time to relearn, have the brain relearn how to cope with that stress in a healthier way.
So while that that partner is dealing with their porn addiction and detoxing from sex, what does the other person do? What do you recommend?
Well, it depends if their relationship is still there. Sometimes some of the people at that point, unfortunately, their relationship has fallen off.
Which
I think is really sad. But hopefully their partner isn't with them, if that's the best thing for both of them. And I would say you find ways to connect in other ways.
Okay.
I think that they're, honestly, if we're here at, down at this end, like where it's extreme, you have a lot of healing to do.
What is your best advice to singles and couples when it comes to watching porn online? This is the bow of the whole podcast.
Like I said, I'm not against porn, so moderation in watching responsibly. You know, and I always say mix it up. Don't have sex in the same position all the time. Don't watch porn when you masturbate every time. Mix it up. Go every other. I think that's what I would say. Just think about everything in balance.
Just like life.
It's hard.
Thank you so much, Dr. Mindy. If you want to get in touch with her, she's on Instagram, Dr. Mindy DeSetta with a D, or you can DM her on her website, insight-miami.com. Mm-hmm. Okay, Dr. Mindy. Wow. Okay, so everybody watch your addictions or watch your potential addictions and keep everything in moderation. Happy watching. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you on the next Advice for Life with Lynn. A reminder to everybody, submit your questions on adviceforlifewithlynn.com. And while you're there, sign up for my free email. You'll be the first to get my weekly blog on how to live consciously and peacefully. You'll also get access to my free happiness guide when you sign up. Also, I'm looking for guests with different ways that they can help the Advice for Life with Lynn followers. So reach out, maybe if you think you've got something to say and you want to be on the podcast. Lastly, please subscribe and rate my podcast on iTunes. I really care about what you think, so tell me how I'm doing. I want your thoughts. The links are in the show notes and also on the website. I want to help as many people as I can with this podcast. So your shares, your subscribes and reviews help us gain visibility in the iTunes store and they help us reach more people. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next time. And remember, there is nothing we can't talk about.